What's going on, guys? It's JP from the Double Double, and I'm here with my co-host, Ben.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome.
And this should be a quick one today, but we're going to do the quarter poll awards for this NBA season. The most important award of every season, we'll start off with the MVP, and that is a no-doubter this season, Joel Embiid. How have you just taken in how Joel has played this year?
He has somehow topped his last year numbers, which were already gaudy and ridiculous. Yeah. Right now, he's averaging 35 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks a game, 54% from the field, 89% from the free throw line. He has been a monster this season. I think he's already missed 8 fourth quarters because of how dominant him and the Sixers are through the first 3 quarters of games.
Yeah.
It's been unbelievable watching him do this. He's averaging more points per game than minutes played right now. I'm out of words, man. He's looked unbelievable. It's a shout out to Nick Nurse for the way he's been coached, but Embiid's just on another level this year.
Yeah, I feel almost a little nervous to even say this, but it kind of does feel similar to what Jokic did last year in the sense that once we saw them rolling in the playoffs, we knew the Nuggets were taking home the title because you just can't stop that guy. Obviously, it's the regular season. Obviously, we're a quarter through the season, but it does feel like Joel is at the absolute apex he'll probably ever be at. I mean, 35, 12, and 6 a night, and he's shooting close to 90% from the free throw line as a 7'2" guy. Like, it's just hard to imagine someone can have more of an impact than what he's doing at this moment. I just honestly, as a fan of basketball, I hope he can carry this into the postseason. I'd love to see him make a deep run.
Man, and I really think it's possible. You know, Doc Rivers is the probably biggest pants pooper of a coach that the NBA has to offer. Switching from him to Nick Nurse is going to do wonders for Joel Embiid. We'll get to see really who we can put the blame on, but I have a lot of faith in Joel Embiid come playoff time. But just in terms of big moments, his last game against the number one defense in the NBA, he drops 51 points and dominates from the start of the game to finish. There hasn't really been a game this year. I think his worst was he had 20 points against Boston in an outing. That may be his worst of the season.
Yeah.
Every single night is a masterclass.
And I know what people are going to say. It's like, oh, he gets such a good whistle. He's a massive flopper. These things are true, right?
Yes.
I'm not going to pretend that they're not. I'm not going to give him a ton of credit for that either, just because I think it's an ugly style of basketball. But if you did watch that Timberwolves game, you saw him jab stepping, pivoting, canning mid-range jumper after jumper after jumper over and over and over again, whether it was Cat or Embiid. I mean, Cat or Gobert trying to defend Embiid. And he got both of those dudes in foul trouble really early. Like I said, I'm not going to reward him for that type of ugly gameplay, but it drastically altered the game and how they had to guard Embiid. What he's done this year, like, people kept kind of clowning him on Twitter for beating up on trash teams, and then he dropped 51 on the best defense in the entire league, and he kind of put that narrative to rest.
Absolutely, dude. And one of the coolest parts about this season for Embiid is the 6 assists a game. His previous career high, I think, was 4.2 is his best. And this was an area, you know, that just causes problems for him constantly. His ability to deal with double teams has been an issue that's killed him in playoff series after playoff series. And it's just not a problem so far this season. He's just got so much speed getting to the hoop as soon as the ball's in his hands. They've really removed a lot of the really slow ISO ball that they were playing last year. And the boost that it's had on Joel Embiid's success is so cannot be overstated.
Yeah, he's been a pleasure to watch. And I'm just really happy for Sixers fans that they get to watch this guy continue to grow. And I think Embiid's going to give them a pretty good chance against a team like Boston or a team like the Bucks, where he, you know, if he plays the way he's playing right now, he gives them a legitimate shot to maybe surpass one of those teams above him.
Absolutely. With the success, though, I mean, there's a lot of guys putting up a lot of points in the NBA right now. Luka's averaging 33, KD's averaging 31, Giannis is at 31, SGA's at 31. But with the success of the Sixers, plus just the all-around other numbers that Joel Embiid's putting up, really there's no question.
And it's the physical imprint he leaves on a game where it's like people are getting in foul trouble. People have to, like, slam their bodies into him over the course of a game to try to stop him from scoring. And we forget he is one of the best defenders in the entire league. I think sometimes we like to forget that because of how great of an offensive player he is, but this guy is one of the premier defenders in our league today. So yeah, Joel deserves this award kind of in a landslide, in my opinion.
I think so too, 100%. Moving on to the Rookie of the Year, this is an interesting one because it's really just a two-headed snake. There's Victor Wembanyama and there's Chet Holmgren, and the stories for both of these guys is a little bit different. Chet Holmgren is playing really, really efficiently on a great Thunder team that is at the top of the West. He's averaging 17 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists. Victor Wembanyama is the man on a team that's garbage, but he's averaging 19 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists. Both of their block numbers are stupid, but just for the efficiency, I'm giving Rookie of the Year to Chet Holmgren.
Yeah, and I disagreed with you for the last couple of weeks. I've recently switched my opinion. It's just, as someone who's obsessed with efficiency like myself, it is kind of hard to reward what Wemby's doing right now, even though I can't really place the entire blame on him. Like, go look at that roster. Go watch them play basketball on a nightly basis. It's disgusting. And honestly, I think it is time to start questioning, like, is Popovich even an average NBA head coach? And I also, seriously, and also, like, I think a lot of us were really excited by the idea of him going to the Spurs. I, right now, in this current moment, am so disappointed he's not a Houston Rocket. I know you, like, love Amen, and obviously, Wemby's a better prospect. But I just think Ime, if he had Wembanyama and just had him like a clay that he could mold, oh my god, what we would be seeing right now would be so stupid, but we can't do ifs and buts. We just have what we have, and Chet is the better player, or is playing better right now. I believe Wemby actually is the better player out of the two of them. I just think his circumstances are dragging him down.
That's really what it comes down to, is the circumstances. If you are unfortunate enough to watch Spurs basketball this year, you're going to watch a lot of plays where Wembanyama is wide open and completely ignored for a possession. It's a mix of not having the right guys to get him the ball, not having the right guys to even look to make passes, and then it looks like the offensive scheme isn't built around their best player. It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense when you watch it. I don't know why. Like, Wembanyama, if they wanted to, he could be the Rookie of the Year in a landslide. They could give the ball to him so much more. He could take, you know, more than 16 shots a game. But they just ice him out of game sometimes. Chet shows up basically every single night. He's a great force protecting the paint. Yeah. He's a great three-point shooter off the break. 38% from three is crazy. And he's still, you know, for a dude as skinny as he is, he's still making an imprint in the paint.
Yeah, a nickname I heard from him while I was doing tape on him in college was the Venus Flytrap. And I just think that is the best nickname for him ever, because it completely encapsulates what he is on defense. People think they can bully him in the paint because he weighs 170 pounds soaking wet, but his timing, his anticipation, and his just coordination, being able to put his hand on the basketball instead of fouling, is just, it is like otherworldly. He is a top 5 to 7 defender in the league as a rookie. Like, what Chet is doing for OKC right now is absurd. And we're seeing it pay dividends. OKC's, I believe, still a top 5 offense and a top 5 defense. I don't have the numbers in front of me right now.
Sixth.
Okay, so they're just outside. But, like, that is directly off the back of Chet Holmgren and the two-way effort from SGA on the perimeter and Lugin's door. Like, they have created a defensive identity centered around their rookie Chet. I've been super impressed by him as a player.
And again, that's the difference between these two rookies, is there's an entire defensive strategy with competent NBA players around Chet Holmgren, and Victor Wembanyama just doesn't have that. These two rookies are top 5 in the NBA in blocks right now. Wemby's at 3 blocks a game. Chet Holmgren's at 2.8 blocks a game. I think they will probably be 2 of the top 3 to top 4 guys in terms of blocks per game for the rest of their career. It's insanity what we've seen from these two guys. What would it take for you, based on what we've seen from the Spurs, what would it take from you for Wembanyama to overtake Chet in terms of the Rookie of the Year?
It would just have to be a tick up in efficiency. It's just so low right now, especially for a guy who's 7'5". But if you watch these games, like, his teammates are missing him on easy looks in the paint. Like, he's settling for jumpers. I'm not absolving him of all of this. Like, he is taking too many jump shots. I will never back off that take. And a lot of them are self-created. He's not really doing what Chet's doing, which is, like, stepping in to catch and shoot threes and just knocking them down. He's trying to look like Kevin Durant out there. That's what he's attempting to do. And I think there should be less of that. So I'm not giving him, like, free reign, but it would have to be just a streak of, like, uber-efficient basketball while continuing to being the defensive force that he is.
Yeah, so far he has, let's see, 15, 16 games where he's taken five threes or more. Three of those games he's hit three or more. So he's a dude who really, really likes taking threes, but just hasn't found the touch yet. Yeah. And you can see it, man. The stroke looks so nice. It's something we've been saying basically for a year and a half at this point, yeah, that he looks really good shooting the ball. It just doesn't fall at the clip you want it to. But it's a matter of getting good teammates around him. You can't really judge him for what he is right now because just the overall product of the San Antonio Spurs is so poor.
I know, and it kind of makes me think back to something I said during the summer where I made a joke, like, the Spurs should just trade all of their future first-round picks for the third overall pick to Portland for Scoot. And they should just, like, have Scoot and Wemby and zero picks moving forward and just develop those two guys at the same time. Like, seeing the lack of playmaking on the Spurs is super alarming. And when you're talking about a 7'5" guy who, you know, needs to be set up to get some of his shots, and there's just no one available to do that other than the backup point guard, Tyus Jones' little brother, I think Trey.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, it's pretty depressing. And then you get to see Chet, obviously, thriving in an environment where everyone there loves to pass the ball. The two-way effort is gorgeous. He has an MVP candidate taking the offensive pressure off of him. Chet deserves this award, absolutely. I'm not taking anything away from him, but it does make me jealous for Wemby fans or jealous of Chet fans because Wemby doesn't get those same circumstances.
Yeah, man, I totally agree with you. You know, according to Basketball Reference, 60% of Wemby's minutes have been played at power forward. So in terms of just having a consistent structure around him, there's nothing. He looks so much better at the center. I know he's skinny. But they look better as a defensive unit, again, with him at the five. We just don't see cohesion of any kind from the Spurs. I do want to talk about one more rookie who's not in this race, but has been amazing. And it's a guy you've been on from the very start. Talk about Brandon Miller, what he's been doing this season.
Dude, I've loved Brandon Miller from the jump. I said before the season, like, we need to kill the narrative. He's going to be worse than the Thompson twins. That was ridiculous from the jump. Just because he had a few bad summer league games, there was a huge narrative growing that this guy's bad at basketball. No, this was one of the better scoring prospects I've ever seen. I don't know where, like, this outrage came from, but he's been awesome the entire season. Like, shooting off the dribble, shooting off the catch. He's getting better at driving to the paint, shooting mid-range, defense, the entire deal. He's exactly what you want to see from a rookie. I've been super impressed.
6'9", 210 pounds, basically the ideal plug-and-play offensive player in today's game. He guards, they have him guarding twos and threes sometimes because he hasn't put on the muscle yet. But as an offensive player, just the ability to hit catch-and-shoot threes really effectively, hit some threes off the break, do a little bit of facilitating, and just be a guy who, whenever he takes shots, you're confident. From whatever part of the floor he takes a shot, you're confident. He's been awesome. Really, really
and
great.
I also think, really quickly, if you were to go to a contending team and ask them, if you could get a guy who's 6'9", 200 pounds, and is willing to make the right play and shoots 38% from three, and is willing to guard the best player on the opposite team every single night, would you want that guy? I don't know who's saying no to that offer, and I only think there's room for him to grow, so I've been super impressed.
Yeah, he has been awesome, and I really don't think there's a chance for him to jump into the Rookie of the Year conversation just because of what he's dealing with Wemby and Chet, but
right,
he's a lock for all rookie first team. And he's just been unbelievable, man. It's so much fun to watch him night after night.
We'll have to do a rookie check-in at some point for all of these guys, just because we put so much effort into our draft prep, the both of us. We'll have to, like, kind of check in on how they're doing. But, yeah, rookies have been really fun this year. Let's move on to Defensive Player of the Year. This one is probably a shocker, just considering where we were at this point last year. Rudy Gobert is our winner for this award, and me and you talked about how it could potentially be one of the worst trades ever. He's been awesome, and usually you don't see players like this past the age of 30 rebound their careers like this, but he went from an average defender last year who still struggled on offense. He always has, but his defense kind of made up for it, to now being what he was in Utah and also having defensive help on the perimeter. And it is just, that defense is running on all cylinders right now. They're awesome in Minnesota.
So when Rudy Gobert was winning Defensive Player of the Years early in his career, it was him and nobody else who was good at defense. And that team was a top 10 defense year after year. This year, he's got help, and they're the number one defense. He's got the number one defensive rating in all of basketball, and you can see it night after night. It's back to what we've known Rudy Gobert to be, just a guy who protects the paint incredibly well. And they have a defense centered around running these guys at Gobert and having their plan just get blown up. The Timberwolves are such a fun defense, man. Night after night, they just pick teams apart. Rudy Gobert is such a huge part of that.
Yeah, and me and you have been on this podcast defending Rudy Gobert as a defensive player or as a playoff player, because there were multiple series where the Utah Jazz were getting slammed defensively, but you saw Bogdan Bogdanovic letting lanes open to the rim endlessly and then kick out for three, or Donovan Mitchell, same thing. And we just kept seeing the same pattern where Rudy couldn't cover enough ground to save everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept showing itself in the playoffs, and me and you both hopped on this podcast and said, we need to pay attention to the perimeter players, not to Rudy here. And now we're seeing what happens when you actually surround him with perimeter defensive talent. You just can't score. Like Minnesota, what the percentages they're holding their opponents to right now are staggering. And another thing that I like in my defensive player of the years is rebounding. It matters to me to secure rebounds and end offensive possessions. Like, him compared to Jaren Jackson Jr. is not a competition for me. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. last year had the block numbers, but that guy was averaging like 8 boards a game, and you didn't really feel a physical aspect to him out on the court. With Rudy, he's ripping down rebounds, ending possessions, and blocking shots, and bodying up bigger players every night. He's been really, really good.
He has, man. And I think, you know, there is an argument to the fact that there are already so many strong defenders in that starting five for Minnesota that Rudy Gobert's got a lot of help there. So there's a guy that I want to give a lot of love to, and if he stays healthy, I hope he's in this conversation for real, Anthony Davis. He's been unbelievable. Yeah. The Lakers are a great defense again, and, you know, we've seen games already from AD. We talk about it every year. Once every 4 games, he's the best player on the planet. But every single night, he is a monster defender. He is excellent at protecting the paint, a lot more switchable than people give him credit for. Yeah. He's been an unbelievable defender, and there's not a lot of excellent defense around him.
You know what? And we should have given him more of a serious consideration for this. Obviously, with the rate the Wolves are winning, and they're the number one defense in the league, we have to kind of give the nod to Rudy. But in terms of like switchability and absolute game wrecking, Anthony Davis is the best defensive player in the league. It's just, how long can he sustain it, and is it every night?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately for him, he has the task of being the second best offensive player on his team and having to be the best defensive player on his team. Rudy Gobert just has to do defense, and he can be the 5th best offensive option on his team. So Anthony Davis is having like an all-time season right now. I'm glad you brought him up. He deserves his flowers.
And that's the thing about him is, with that offensive load, I feel like, you know, that's the thing that wavers. Every single night his defense is awesome, but whether or not you're going to get 28 to 30 points from him, that's the thing that's going to waver. He's capable of getting 3 blocks a game every single game for the season. He's at 2.6 right now. And yeah, there's not another great defender on this team, maybe. Cam Reddish is great on the perimeter sometimes, but they're the 7th best defense in the NBA, and it's Anthony Davis and then whatever effort you can get from the rest of them.
It's a really good point. It is kind of more of a one-man show in Los Angeles than it is in Minnesota. There are other contributors in Minnesota that are definitely helping out that defensive rating. But yeah, thank you for bringing him up. Let's move on to 6th man. In my opinion, this one's already kind of closed. Austin Reeves for the Los Angeles Lakers, averaging 15, 5, and 5 from 48% from the floor and 36% from three. He is so important to this team. Like, he is running crunch time minutes at point guard, setting Anthony Davis up in the pick and roll, hitting big time shots. I think he already had one game winner earlier this season. This, without Austin Reeves, the Lakers offense would be abysmal. It's already pretty bad. Without this dude, it would be like bottom of the barrel type stuff. His importance cannot be understated.
Yeah, man, we saw, you know, how much the Lakers struggled offensively when he was struggling early in the season before he really got his groove back. Right now, he's averaging 15, 5, and 5. He's started 9 games. I don't really know the criteria in terms of how many games you can start and still be a sixth man of the year, but he's known for coming off the bench.
Right.
But yeah, man, we've seen just how piss poor the Lakers offense can be in some of these moments, because there's just some of it's ugly, man. D'Angelo Russell ISO buckets are ugly. Torian Prince can be really hit or miss. Austin Reeves is a guy who has started showing up consistently night after night to set guys up and to score himself.
Yeah, and the criteria for starting, too, with him is a little bit funny, because when he was starting, he was really struggling. Mm-hmm. And then once they moved him to the bench, he started playing out of his mind. So those percentages I read you are actually like deflated because of those games he started. He's been on a tear since being moved to the bench. I also think it helps, one, he has the Los Angeles spotlight, and two, he's on national TV quite a bit, obviously because the Lakers and LeBron. So people are seeing him help the Lakers close out primetime games and help set up Anthony Davis for success on a national broadcast. So I definitely think that helps his narrative for this award.
Yeah, man. And I'm not really sure who the other big time names are that really are in contention. Because of what Austin Reeves is doing, I'm not sure that we can give it to another guy.
The only other guy I even want to like kind of shout out for this is Cole Anthony. Cole Anthony kind of viewed himself as a star in the past. I think he's finally accepted that my role is to keep leads when the starters hit the bench, and he just erupts for points. He's giving me shades of Malik Monk from last year. His percentages here, 46% from the floor, 36% from three, averaging 15 points with 4 assists a game, right? So similar statistically to Austin Reeves, just for a less important team, and he has less of importance closing out games. Like, the Magic don't have Cole Anthony on the floor in the final 5 minutes. The Lakers need Austin Reeves on the floor in the final 5 minutes.
I think that's a great point. Cole Anthony is doing awesome. 15-4-4 compared to Reeves, 15-5-5. There's definitely a case to be made. Unfortunately, being out in Orlando, I don't know if he's going to get any buzz compared to the Los Angeles Austin Reeves. But, man, I do appreciate the shout-out. I think it's good that he gets a shout-out, because I didn't have faith in him being this level of impact guy. Based on what we saw from him last year, the fact that he's accepted this role, shrank, you know, into what they needed him to be, which is a guy that goes out and gets buckets when everybody else is on the floor, it's really fun to watch, man.
Yeah, he was giving me shades of like Caris LeVert, Kelly Oubre stuff, where I thought pretty quickly here we were going to go to vet minimum, but he's proven himself to be like a bench contributor, a great teammate, a leader. Like, he's checked all the boxes this year. Super, super happy for Magic fans. They've kind of figured out that guard rotation finally.
100%. Moving on to the most improved player. This one's kind of a landslide. There's some guys you can give some shout outs to, but Tyrese Maxey has been on a tear this season. Without James Harden, his assist numbers have doubled from last season. His points per game's jumped up to 26. The percentages are all just about where they were. Little bit of a dip. But just the overall impact from him night after night, the fact that he's going to make his first All-Star game, he is the most improved player.
100%. He's scoring 26 points on 46 from the floor, 40% from three, and 90% from the free throw line. And this is all while averaging 7 assists to only 1.5 turnovers. This guy is taking care of the ball. He's a huge part of that offensive engine in Philadelphia, who is just blowing teams off the floor, right? Like, this guy and Joel Embiid are sitting out fourth quarters sometimes because of how badly they're beating teams. He has been a pleasure to watch. He is perfect in Nick Nurse's system, the DHO, just running off of screens. He's one of the fastest players in the league. It's really, really kind of catered to his skill set, especially his catch and shoot as well. He's comfortable on or off ball. I love this kid, man. He's a joy to watch.
The numbers are insane. The fact that he jumped from 3.5 assists on 1.3 turnovers to 7 assists on 1.5 turnovers, that's unbelievable, man. With the point jump, Nick Nurse, the more we talk about the Sixers, the more I feel like Nick Nurse might have to be the coach of the year. That'll be the one we talk about next. But, like, my God, man, the way that the Sixers look this year, they're awesome.
Yeah, we'll talk about Coach Nurse in a second. But just to give Tyrese Maxey a little bit more of his flowers, like, this was a guy that was being kind of thrown around in trade rumors a little bit not too long ago. And now he is a all-star, if not all-NBA caliber player at this point. If you're Philadelphia, you're just jumping up and down with happiness because James Harden leaves your building, you get picks in return, your cap space is wide open, and he's better than Harden, just straight up. Like, you put those two guys against each other, Tyrese Maxey is the better player. So you basically just realigned your lineup and got more assets to do so. If you're a Philly fan, you're high on life right now.
Absolutely, man. Maxey's had 7 30-point games this season and one 50-point game against the Pacers. The way that he can just explode, especially from three, man, it's just he's got the kind of speed that just other people in the NBA do not have, especially that first step, the way that he gets by people and the way that the system is now built to get everybody involved and to see him on those cuts. It just, it's all such a perfect offense going on in Philly.
And just as a personality type as well, really quickly on Tyrese, like, he is the type of guy who wants others to do better. And he is not an ego-driven player. I believe the way he's playing right now is because they asked him to do so. He's not asking Coach Nurse to take 20 shots a night. It's because they need him to, and he's important to their system. But he's just as happy with the ball as he is without the ball. And it shows in Philadelphia. Like, those dudes are beating the shit out of everyone they play.
Yeah, man. And in terms of other names for most improved player, nobody else is jumping to the all-star status. Alperen Şengün has been excellent. I want to give him some love just for the fact that he's grown as a guy who's now a competent defender, a guy that can leave out in clutch minutes. The jump in points to 20 points a game is awesome. I do want to see some improvements in this playmaking, but just as a dude who deserves some love, Shangoon's been great.
And I have to eat crow on him. I've been calling him overrated since his, you know, draft. I liked him up to the process, but then once I saw him out on the court, I was like, he's too bad at defense. Like, I don't know why we're even giving this guy attention. He's a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio at the center spot. He's averaging 2 stocks a game, which is pretty good. Obviously, he took that jump to 20 points per game on pretty good efficiency from the floor, and Ime is running a lot of stuff through him. I think this is kind of best-case scenario for who he turned out to be, and that is, like, kind of a borderline all-star. He has a case to make the all-star game come February, I think.
He does, man. He's got the second-best defensive rating on the team. The Rockets are, you know, in the middle. They're 13-12 right now, hovering a little bit above 500. Where they'll end when the all-star break happens probably determines whether or not he gets in, because I don't know if anybody's going to reward, you know, 29-5 on a team that's bad. But I love watching Şengün, man. He's not, you know, there are some issues with the offense going on in Houston. He's not the problem.
No. Let's move on to Coach of the Year. So Ben, how about you take this one away?
This is a two-headed snake, man. Chris Finch brought the Timberwolves to the one seed in the West, and I don't think anybody really expected that. Me and you, JP, have been talking about the Wolves as a force to be reckoned with, but I didn't expect them to be 21-6 at this point in the season. Nick Nurse has transformed the Sixers offense without James Harden into one of the most fun offenses in basketball. Tyrese Maxey and Embiid are incredible. The amount of guys who could just get you a bucket and the way that they're all utilized, it's awesome. I don't know who to give it to, man. I don't know. There's more talent in Minnesota, but the coaching brilliance in Philly, I don't know.
That's why I threw it to you, because I don't know who to give it to either. As far as Minnesota goes, I was very, very high on them for months now. Like, literally since the end of last season, I've been telling you, this team's going to be really, really freaking good. honestly, with Philly, I did not see this coming. I understand that they have a top three MVP candidate on your team, and what comes with that is usually a 50-win season. But when you have the turmoil that they had over the summer, where your second best player at the time is demanding out, calling your GM a liar, you know, going on press tours, telling everyone how stupid the organization is, how they lied to him, you know, all this bullshit, and then he doesn't even show up to play and, like, prove that he's worthy of trading for. He's just sitting out games. That type of turmoil kills teams. Kills chemistry, kills vibes. Nick Nurse didn't give a shit at all. Like, the offense was humming without Harden when he was still in that weird zone as a Sixer. And ever since he's left, and the, like, the addition of Nicholas Batum and Robert Covington, they've been unstoppable. So, you know, I'm a little bit more surprised by how Philly looks than how Minnesota looks, because I was already so optimistic about Minnesota. So maybe I give Philly the edge here, or Nick Nurse the edge here. You can go back to some of our podcasts. Like, me and you both thought the Sixers were going to explode.
Yeah, I think that's why we have to give it to Nick Nurse. The increase, I mean, the Joel Embiid, what we're seeing from him, Doc Rivers could never. Just the offense that we're seeing, if you would have said at the start of this season, you trade James Harden and you get back Nicholas Batum and Robert Covington and Marcus Morris, that's terrifying. I would have been 100% certain this was an implosion year. But they got better, man. They got more fun to watch. They got more players involved. It's easier to see this style working out when the playoffs start compared to what they were doing under Doc Rivers. So compared to expectations that we had for these teams, I think you have to give Nick Nurse the edge.
Yeah, and it's funny, come playoff time, both of these teams have a new identity that we haven't really been able to see in this last year or so. Obviously, the Timberwolves missed Karl-Anthony Towns for close to 60 games last year, and he's back and he's kind of figured out his rhythm as the second option and as a defensive player for the first time in his career. And then in Philadelphia, instead of this isolation, heavy dribble, pick and roll over and over and over again offense with Joel Embiid and James Harden, they've incorporated movement, DHOs, Tyrese Maxey just darting to the hoop, Joel Embiid isolations at the free throw line. Like, they are completely different teams, both of them. Both of these coaches deserve a ton of credit for getting these teams to work how they're working.
Yeah, the reason I was so over the top with Chris Finch in the beginning needing to win this was because of my lack of faith for Karl-Anthony Towns and how they were going to integrate him into this system. I have to eat crow. How many times did I tell you he was going to need to get traded? There was no way it was going to work. And I'm 100% wrong, and they look awesome. So for that, bringing in, having two slow-footed seven-footers on the floor at the same time and having it work as effectively as it's working, I have to give Chris Finch so much credit. Honestly, if the season ended right now, I don't know who would win.
I don't know either. And there's another coach out there that will get a lot of votes as well, with Mark Daigneault, for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Me personally, I kind of said this to you before we started recording. I feel like him and Minnesota him and Chris Finch have a very similar case where their teams were okay and ready for a jump, and both of these teams took a jump, but Minnesota's just the better team out of the two of them. So that kind of ends the arguments as far as I'm concerned, but a lot of people have a lot of respect for what he's done and what he's done to turn around that OKC team.
Yeah, and the thing that makes OKC different from the rest of the teams in this kind of at the top of the food chain is the youth. 25, 22 years old, 21 years old. They got one, their oldest starter is 25. The oldest guy playing more than 20 minutes is Shea. The fact that they have been able to instantly make Chet Holmgren a super, super effective part of their offense and defense, that's something that you've got to give Daigneault a lot of credit for. Because, I mean, I was definitely worried about their size. We have talked forever about the worries that they're going to have rebounding when the playoffs started. I thought that was going to be a night-after-night issue with the lack of size that they have. And it really hasn't killed them.
Yeah. No, they've taken their odd lineup, because they are. They're just an oddly constructed team with the personnel they have. And they've just managed to be the second seed in the West. And that's really, really impressive. Like, they're a very talented team, don't get me wrong, but their players' archetypes and players' skill sets don't exactly mesh beautifully.
No.
And he's figured out a way to get this team to a point where every single night they face someone, like, they expect to win.
Yeah, man. Talk about success out of a lack of three-point shooting. How often do you really see it to this extent in today's game? SGA takes 3 threes, Jalen Williams 3, Chet Holmgren 4, Lou Dort 4. Their biggest sharpshooter is Isaiah Joe. who's awesome, and he shoots 43%, but like, who?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the fact that they've been able to succeed with as funky of a lineup, they give up more offensive rebounds than any other team in basketball, and they're still the 2 seed in the West. It is funky.
I have a question for you just to wrap up. It doesn't really have to do with Coach of the Year, but it's more of the Coach of the Year candidates and how valid their teams are coming into the playoff race. I know we're pretty far out and the trade deadline's still around, so these teams could make moves. But as we're currently presented, you know, out of Minnesota, Philly, and the Thunder, rank them as who is the most legitimate playoff threat heading into the postseason, especially with these new coaches and their systems. I can start first if you want me to.
Sure.
I'm going to go Philly, Minnesota, Thunder. I'm giving Philly the nod just out of respect for Joel Embiid, because I'm obsessed with Minnesota and I love what they're doing. And they're finally doing what I've wanted them to do. But I just don't think we can underestimate the level Joel Embiid is playing at. Like, if he is healthy during that playoff run and he's doing what he's doing, he will be in the Eastern Conference Finals. I love Minnesota. And then I still struggle with the Thunder rebounding and the Thunder three-point shooting. So even though they're super exciting and they're winning a lot, I'm a little nervous about those two factors.
Oh, I would 100% put OKC third in that list.
Okay.
Between Minnesota and Philly, that is the question. Ooh. And it's, you know, how much of Joel Embiid's pants pooping comes down to injuries and Doc Rivers?
Yeah.
That's the question. And we won't know until this playoff series. I have a lot of hope for Philly, though. We come into this, you know, I don't even know what that means, though. Can they take down Boston? They're really good. They have the talent to.
This is something, as a Celtics fan, like, I'm watching this game out in California at this point, but game 7, Celtics and 76ers, they were tied at half. 5 minutes into the third quarter, you knew the game was over.
Yeah.
The Sixers, their energy, their body language, their attitudes, their effort was disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
That does not happen under Nick Nurse.
No.
And that does not happen with James Harden on a different team. I'm just betting on the, you know, the new energy, the new life that this team has to prevent Joel Embiid from shitting his pants like he did in the past.
Yeah, man. I mean, you can't blame him when the rest of the team's energy hits the tanks. I mean, that's a Doc Rivers thing. That's a thing that happens on his coach teams year after year, team after team. Nick Nurse is going to make shit look different. I 100% believe that. But then you go to Minnesota's side, and with the size that they have, maybe there's nobody that can stop them. Denver doesn't look as smooth as they looked last year. And Minnesota, we've already talked about, gave them the hardest fight without two of their best players. So you add even more size and strength onto that floor. Who stands in Minnesota's way? OKC certainly doesn't. If that's a 1v1 matchup, they are getting smoked.
Yeah, I agree. And I said a few weeks back, I expect Minnesota in the Western Conference Finals. I'm sticking to that.
Yeah.
And I really think there's like a legitimate shot they could make the finals. Now, it sounds a little crazy because Anthony Edwards is their best player and he's 22. So that's like all-time territory he would put himself in if he got his team to a finals at 22 years old. But we saw the way they played Boston earlier this year. Like, they beat a Boston Celtics team in overtime by just absolutely smothering their two wings, and Boston couldn't get a good shot off. Against every other team in the league, Boston has looked like the best team, one of the best teams of all time. So this team has, I think, a unique defense that only comes around every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Edwards, I think, is the kind of guy you can just bet on being the dude when the playoffs start. We saw him average 32-5-5 against the Nuggets in that loss. I mean, imagine if that team was fully healthy, what that series would have been. You've been saying it for months. But Anthony Edwards is that dude. Doesn't matter that he's 22. When the playoffs start, he is that dude. Yeah. He's going to continue to be that dude.
Yeah. All in all, though, with the coaches of the year, like, we kind of joke about this on this podcast, like, how many top five coaches are there? The list just keeps growing. Yeah. There's like a million top five coaches.
There really
are. You got Ty Lue, Nick Nurse, all these guys. There's so many valid options. This league's in very good hands with its players and coaches. Is there, really quick, for Executive of the Year, I know this is like the most boring award ever, and we didn't talk about this pre-show, but just to throw this in quickly, is there like an executive that's free agency moves really moved you and kind of changed how you view the team? Or is there like kind of no one that's done a good enough job in free agency or through trade?
I mean, I think it all comes down to whether or not Milwaukee really looks like a powerhouse when the season ends.
Okay.
Because they've taken a little bit, and they've both had really good moments. Dame and Giannis have both had really good moments, but together they haven't been just a steamroll that I've expected them to be. I think he's the guy.
I think I just forgot an easy option for us, and I think you did too. Brad Stevens.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's his award this year, right? He trades Marcus Smart for Kristaps. Kristaps has been unbelievable, playing the best basketball of his life. And then he also brings in Drew Holiday, who, you know, offensively, we didn't expect much anyway, but he's been exactly what we've known him as on defense. And now he's created this absolute juggernaut in the Celtics, with trade exceptions to use at the trade deadline as well, let's not forget. So, It probably just goes to Brad, right?
100%. Brad Stevens has to be the guy. Drew Holiday shooting 40% from three right now. He's been excellent. Kristaps Porzingis is averaging, what, 19-9, 19-7? Yeah. 2 blocks a game. The trades have been perfect. Brad Stevens is a dude who just makes excellent move after excellent move. And, yeah, he's probably the dude. Unless the Milwaukee Bucks at the end of the season just look like the best team in basketball, and Dame and Giannis are hot at the same time.
Right. And then you can make the case they made the big swing and it paid off, and now they're like the contender.
100%.
You can totally make that argument, but I think I mentioned this like last year on the pod. You know, how many players are you taking before Brad Stevens as your GM? It's legitimately a hard question.
I don't have an answer. Legitimately don't have an answer. I don't know.
Like, to start your franchise, would you rather have Cade Cunningham or Brad Stevens?
Brad Stevens.
Brad Stevens.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Evan Mobley or Brad Stevens?
Brad Stevens.
Brad Stevens. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, these are some of the best young players in the league. I'm taking the guy in the chair.
100%.
He's been awesome. So I think that's everything for us today. Ben, do you have anything else to mention before we get on out of here?
I do actually have one more quick thing. I don't know that we talked enough about it. The MVP race is always going to be like a big buzz. We got to throw in other names. When it comes to the end of the season, if things carry out the way they're carrying out now, is there an argument, or is it just Joel Embiid's the winner and let's wrap it up?
It's like a landslide right now, dude. It's weird because Jokic, the Nuggets aren't winning like we thought they were going to be winning.
Mm-hmm.
And Jokic had a few stinky performances back to back, which were pretty strange. And SGA, you know, he feels like a fake candidate for this award because he's not as good as Jokic and he's not as good as Giannis, but his team is winning a lot. So he'll be fourth, and then Tatum will be fifth or sixth because Luka is an unbelievable candidate as well. But really it is like, it's Embiid, Jokic, and Giannis. Those are the top three guys, and they should be for the next like 3 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Honestly, just the averages are so stupid. 35 points a game from your center.
Right.
It's silly.
And Giannis is having a hell of a season too. I'm pretty sure he's shooting like 60% from the floor, close to 30 points per game with 13 rebounds. Like
he just put up 64 the other day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's 31 a game on 60% from the floor with 11 rebounds and 5.5 assists.
That's are crazy numbers, dude.
It's insane.
Yeah. But I think you're right. It's just Joel Embiid's award. And, you know, if things are continuing the way they are, I think I'm going to have to turn the tide and give Nick Nurse Coach of the Year. I think, you know, every single award has to go to Philly, basically.
I know. I was thinking to myself, has that ever happened before? One team gets three awards. I don't know.
I don't know.
That seems pretty rare.
Yeah, we'd have to go back and look.
Right. So, this honestly, they're in the running for executive of the year, too. To get rid of Harden and to reshape this team the way they've reshaped it is, you know, it Morey deserves some credit for that.
Absolutely.
So,
but I think that is going to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. JP, you got anything else?
I got nothing.
All right. Peace out, people.
Peace.